Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Yes, that is true.
Today we're going to be talking about the first serial of the seventh season of Doctor Who. The first serial with the Third Doctor. Spearhead from Space! It consists of four episodes that aired from January 3rd, 1970 to January 24th, 1970.
Also, they look super pretty.
They were filmed with film and not video.
Yeah.
The only classic Who serial, except for the Eighth Doctor, to be filmed entirely in film.
True facts!
I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden of mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com for getting us these episodes. You're a saint, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
And joining us today to discuss the first of the third is a returning favorite, Jez!
Hello!
How's it going?
Pretty good. It's like 60 degrees out and it's February in Chicago, so I am very happy.
It's freezing here.
It is not.
It's so cold.
It is not. I know it's not because my phone, for some reason, gave me your weather this morning instead of mine.
You don't know because you haven't been outside.
Well,
it's warm outside.
It's cold in here. It's been cold at work. I've been cold. I've been very, very cold.
So it's cold in here, too. That's why all librarians wear cardigans at work.
Well, is there anything going on you wanted to talk about before we jumped into Doctor Who?
This is the episode that I have been hounding you about since before you started the podcast. It's the one I asked for from the beginning. So I guess after this, I'm just done, because what do I have to look forward to anymore?
Well, you got another episode. You claimed another one. I forget what it is.
I don't know what I did either.
Maybe it's a... I think it might be a Dalek one. I don't remember.
That sounds like me.
Have you ever done a Dalek one?
I've done a lot of Dalek ones.
Oh, wait. Yeah, you did the Invasion of Earth.
I have done at least two Dalek episodes so far. I think it's three if we count the Christmas special.
Which we need to watch that second one eventually. All right, well, let's dive in to... Well, let's talk about the fact that it is film and why it is film.
Because it's pretty.
Yeah, that doesn't last.
The only reason that the whole thing was filmed on film is because there was a strike going on. From what I read, they had new cameras that were color cameras that were more complicated and blah, blah, blah. And so the camera operators were like, hey, we should be compensated for having to learn all this new stuff.
We should be getting more monies.
So they went on strike. And they were like, well, the video people are on strike, but the film people aren't on strike. So we'll just get camera people that work with film and just film this in film.
That must be why they figured out cuts all of a sudden.
My goodness, this serial has a lot of great cuts.
There's so many great, effective, funny cuts. You notice it because we haven't had them at all. We've had cuts, I was like, and I guess the scene ends here. And then we move on to another scene, I don't know. And all of a sudden we've got film people and it's like, oh, they know how it works. Cuts work like this, with jokes and dogs.
Yeah, apologies if you hear the dogs that won't stop barking outside of our apartment.
I don't know why you're looking up. They're behind you.
I'm not looking up. I'm listening with this ear. I'm pointing my ear, not my eyes. But yeah, it looks very pretty, this serial, and that's going to stop.
I mean, it's still going to be in color.
Yeah, which is pretty cool now.
It's not going to be as
It's not going to be nice. As clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Filmic.
Well, yeah.
This is the only Doctor Who serial, again, other than, well, I mean, the eighth one's a movie, it's not a serial. It's the only classic Who serial that is available on Blu-ray, because it's on film, so it can be upconverted easily.
Nice.
I watched it on Dailymotion, which split it up into a lot of small parts, but that was not necessary, but it had the best ads in between, so I was almost okay with it.
Did it have, like, the original ads?
No, this is, like, a current commercial about how bro culture might be dying, and here's how you could save it. And it's the most, like, ridiculous tongue-in-cheek ad about bros. I can't even remember what it was trying to sell them anymore.
That's not a very effective ad if you don't remember what you're supposed to buy afterwards.
It's because the ad was so long, and they don't mention the product until the very end, but it was talking about all the big benefits of bro culture and how we need to save it. It was beautiful.
So the episode starts and we... I'm just trying to do a podcast about Doctor Who.
Well, you gotta set it up more than just... You can't just go right into it. You have to prop it up. You have to build a platform for it.
No, people are listening going, can we talk about the show?
No, they like us chattering. Chattering?
I don't know.
Anyway, episode one
starts and you
can
see...
Can I give a name for it?
If you must.
The Doctor Goes to the Doctor. Episode one.
You absolutely had to get that out.
Did we ever say this is called Spearhead from Space?
Oh, you're the one who does the thing. I don't listen to you when you do.
I don't think I did.
If I'm being honest.
We're talking about the Spearhead from Space, you guys.
That's supposed to be in Jofax.
Wait, I'm just gonna get a clean Spearhead from Space and put it back in the beginning in case I didn't say it.
All right.
Spearhead from Space!
Stupid.
All right, episode one of Spearhead from Space.
Can I say my thing, or are you going to interrupt me for like a third time?
The Doctor Goes to the Doctor. Okay.
Stupid.
Go.
So the episode starts and we see the Doctor's face for the first time.
Before we even like officially see his face, they go to like weird lengths to not see his face, even though they put his face in the opening credits.
And the credits are in crazy colors.
Because we have color now.
And they fucked up the theme a little bit.
They didn't fuck it up. It's not broken. You just don't know how it goes anymore.
Well, no, it's not that I don't know how it goes anymore. Okay, I actually read stuff. It actually is fucked up a little bit.
How so?
They, like, resampled it weirdly. And, like, it doubles up at one weird point. And also, the volume of it varies from episode to episode.
Wait, really?
Really.
That's weird. Not surprising, but still strange.
But also, yeah, it sounds like there's, like, a weird double beat at the beginning. It threw me off. Because it's like, instead of like, dun-da-da-da, it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da. I'm like, no, thank you.
I did not notice this.
But the credits, I mean, they do look nice.
Yes, they're red and blue and...
Others.
Others. Other colors.
Maybe purple. And the title zooms out at you. Spearhead from Space. There's no spears in this. I'm just saying. I never once saw a spear or a spearhead.
All right.
Why did they call it that if there are no spearheads? No answers? I'm getting a lot of just blank stares. By blank, I mean full of contempt.
You think so?
So where are the spearheads? For those who are listening, Tony just patted me on the head. So we start in space, and there's Earth.
Yes.
Da-da-dum. And then there's a scanner scanning space. And there's a very sweaty guy looking at the scanner, and he sees something on the scanner. Also, that's going to be a recurring thing. There's very sweaty people in this episode, this serial.
I think at some point they're not sweaty. They're like, if we make them wet, they look shiny.
Yeah, but there's also just people.
But there's also a lot of sweaty people, yes.
For some of them, there's a point to it, but we are not there yet.
Some of it's costuming. Some of it's just sweaty people.
This guy is just a sweaty guy.
Yeah.
And there's something flying in formation. Mm-hmm. It's coming to Earth. And then we cut to a very comically dressed figure who is digging around in the dirt. And I don't think it's ever explained what he's doing.
No, because I wrote in my notes, damn aliens ruining that man's vegetable garden. But then later we find out it's in the middle of the woods and he was just digging in the middle of the forest.
Yeah, like was he planting something? Was he burying something? Was he digging something up? I don't know.
You never just dug a hole because it felt good? No.
All right, Tony, talk. You broke him. Keep going. He won't interrupt you now.
Explain. Do you
digging
do this?
A hole feels good.
You do. Have you done this?
Have I dug a hole
for no reason?
Sure.
Recently?
Not recently.
Okay. Have you ever been almost hit by a meteorite while digging a hole? Because that's what happens.
No.
Did you like that segue?
Yeah, it's good.
Which those meteorites were very, that was a very cool effect when they were flying through space, I guess.
I like them. They look like, did you ever have Gak as a child?
Yes. That's what they look like.
I had chicken pox.
Chicken pox. They look like the containers for Gak.
I don't think I ever had Gak.
That's really sad.
I'm still not convinced that Joe either didn't grow up in the forest or that he wasn't just brought into life at age 20.
I was homeschooled, you guys. I didn't hang out with people. Also, I was in the South, and that is not a place for, like...
fun.
Pop culture awareness. That's a place that you go to if you want to, like, shoot things. animals.
And you don't.
And I don't.
But see, you should have dug a hole. That is prime hole digging conditions.
Okay, but yeah, I didn't do the things that you'd like to do down here. I just stayed at home and read books and watched TV. Also, they're pink.
The meteorites. Did you not see Gak on TV?
It was always green, though.
That's not in question.
Yeah, well, these meteorites are pink.
First of all, Gak comes in many different colors.
See, I didn't know that. I only
know
green.
You're thinking about slime.
I am thinking about slime.
I'm talking about Gak, and I'm specifically talking about the shape of the containers.
I never saw the containers.
And Gak can't.
We were poor children. And by poor children, I just mean me.
Just you.
I'm an only child.
Established.
No, I never had Gak. Never bought Gak, owned Gak. I think
what
I had
about
a
Phloem?
No, never had Phloem. I had something called Flarp.
Is that poor man's Phloem?
It's one of those, like, gooey things in a cup that you push in and it makes fart noises.
Oh, yeah. What is it about Gak that was cooler? Was it just that it was Nickelodeon and you were like,
brand
and it
name.
Comes in that weird container?
Yes.
Did it make fart noises, too?
Yes. Also, if you bit into it.
Why?
Because it was weird.
I'm pretty sure it's toxic.
Have you never bit into, like, Silly Putty?
No!
It snaps.
What are you talking about? Why do you have to put everything into your mouth?
I experience things. You ever just put something in your mouth because it feels good?
I'm not going there. You are filthy. What the hell are we talking about?
We're talking about Spearhead from Space.
Meteorites.
I think it's an interesting choice that they were pink. Like, I feel like that's not an obvious choice for meteorites.
It's because they had color, and they just wanted to use all of the colors they could.
But, like, I think meteorite. I think, like, green, brown.
You know, like, radioactive.
Yeah.
Or rocks.
Or, like, kryptonite, you know. Kryptonite or rocks. I don't think pink. Like, I think that's actually... Kudos to them for going...
We like your pink rocks.
Yeah, somewhere you wouldn't expect. Pink rocks.
The TARDIS lands at this point.
Oh, which, by the way, in our last episode, the look back at 2, Tony, multiple times, was like, I don't know what it's going to be like. There's not going to be a TARDIS. There's going to be no TARDIS. How did people react to that when there was no TARDIS? There's a TARDIS.
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
Yeah, but there is one. It's there. You can go inside of it. He does.
You don't see it.
You do see it. Well,
not inside.
We're not going to see inside the TARDIS at all this season. I read that somewhere.
At all. So what? Multiple times I said something that was factually correct.
Do you know why we don't see inside the TARDIS?
They misplaced the set?
No, they were going to build a new one because they're like, this old one doesn't look good for color. And they did not have the budget to get it made for this season. So like, not in this season.
I did. There was some, like, such apprehension when he walks into the TARDIS for the first time, and he just walks in and is like, ugh, and walks back out.
I'm really sad that we're not going to see it inside the TARDIS at all this season. Makes me sad. But at this point, the TARDIS lands, and then the Doctor just falls out.
Yeah.
Just goes floop. And this is begins the we don't see his face motif.
It's a long time before we see his face.
Again, we saw his face.
We've already seen it. It's
in
not
full
a big reveal.
Color. It's not that big of a surprise. Then we meet Liz Shaw.
I love Liz Shaw so much.
I love Liz Shaw too. Liz Shaw's amazing.
I like her already. I'm already in love with her.
I feel like I've said this a lot on the podcast before, but when I first started Classic Who, I had like just bits and pieces of each Doctor because that's how Netflix set them up. And so I did the Aztecs, and I did the Mind Robber, and then I did Spearhead from Space. And I liked it so much that I tracked things down to just continue the Third Doctor in order. And so much of that was because I love Liz Shaw.
I can see
She's
why.
Amazing.
I wish everybody felt the way we do about her, specifically the people in charge.
I know. She is one of the most underappreciated companions of all time.
Like, she starts off and she's just basically very sassy. Like, you meet her and it's her, is it her in the brig?
Yeah.
It's the brig, like, offering her a job. And Brig's like, we deal with the weird alien shit. And she's like, bullshit. There's no such thing as the weird alien shit.
And say she is a badass woman who is at the top of her field and she can throw so much shade and she does not put up with the brigadier shit.
No.
Fantastic. Their dynamic is nice.
She's not going to put up with anything. Any nonsense. She's not going to have it. And you know this within the first couple of minutes.
She is not amused.
Yeah, actually, there's a point where the Brig asks, rather amusing, don't you think? And it just cuts to Liz's blank face. She says nothing. She's just looking at him like, no. No.
I'm not even going to respond to that?
During the course of this, we find out that this is the second time that meteorites have landed where they landed. Did that ever pay off on in anything? Oh, I guess it's that the ones that are already there came before.
Yes, yes, that makes sense, but it was not explained very well in the serial.
Okay, yeah, just talking out loud, I realized what the answer was as I was saying it. This is the second time meteorites have landed there. The first time had to have been, like, the bad guys that we meet later on.
Yeah, it was only a few months, because later that guy says he was only in America for a couple months, and he came back, and everything was fucked up.
So then the doctor is found and gets taken to the doctor, a doctor.
The hospital.
Yes, he gets taken to the hospital where the doctors are.
So the doctor goes to the doctor. Hence my title.
Yeah, we were all there.
So this is interesting because it's the first time in Doctor Who history that we've established that the doctor has two hearts. So we see an x-ray and there's two hearts. And also, this nurse must be really terrible at her job if she didn't realize that. Like, I realize she's not a doctor, but you should still be able to look at an x-ray and know if there are one or two hearts on it.
To be fair, that x-ray is wrong. It doesn't actually show any hearts.
Okay, I thought that when they were pointing at it. I was like, those are bones, though.
Yeah, it's just bones. That's all you see is bones. It doesn't show...
They just pointed from one chest cavity to another. Yeah. So I wasn't wrong.
You're not wrong. They fucked it up. That's not an actual proper, like, x-ray for finding hearts.
I was going to say, x-ray is not what you would use. Am I wrong?
Well, I mean, there should be, like, tissue and stuff, but, like, you don't see anything. It's just bones.
That man has two hearts. See that space in between the ribs there and that space in between the ribs there?
That's probably why when they do the same joke with the 10th Doctor, they don't use an x-ray, they use a stethoscope.
This kind of... Okay, he had sort of a checkup in the Wheel in Space.
Yeah, but the Wheel in Space is in the future.
Okay.
So they probably wouldn't be like, oh, whoa, two hearts, weird. They'd be like, ah, you're a being with two hearts.
Or you had another one installed.
Right. Like, there's all sorts of weird... They'd be like, you know what, it's rude to ask. There are plenty of weird future reasons why you might have two hearts.
I don't know, so it's weird that they choose to do it here, because they're still attempting to hide the doctor's face. And because it hasn't been established that he has two hearts, I think we're supposed to wonder, wait, is that not the doctor? Is that one of the aliens? But we know it's him, so it doesn't really pay off.
I'm just getting excited, because it seems like they're about to... I think I said this a couple podcasts ago, like, they're about to establish the hell out of some shit.
I read somewhere that the two hearts thing is actually not because of setting this up for Doctor Who or anything. This started out as a completely different thing. The guy who wrote this episode, who is it?
That's a Joe fact. You're supposed to know that.
Yeah.
I think it's Robert Holmes. I might be wrong. Whoever wrote it wrote a movie called The Invasion. And he came up with the idea for it and, like, wrote a script for it. And then somebody else, like, rewrote it. But, like, a lot of what he wrote, he just transposed to this story, including, I believe, the double heart thing. It's like two aliens land nearby in, like, the woods, and they both get taken to the hospital, and one of them kidnaps the other one, and there's a whole thing, and there's apparently some racism. I don't know. But, like, that was the original idea, and, like, a lot of, I think some of the lines that the doctors have are straight from that original script.
Huh.
And he's just turned it into a Doctor Who thing. So I believe the aliens in that had two hearts. And that was part of... He's just like, yeah, might as well throw that in there. The doctor has two hearts.
Yeah, interesting. That's where that comes from.
Wikipedia, you guys.
So he has two hearts, and also his blood is weird.
The doctor walks out to, like, phone someone about the blood, I guess.
I think we need to not use the word doctor. Can we say, like, physician?
The physician. The physician walks out to get on the phone to call somebody or whatever, but there's, like, this very long bit of him trying to get past this guy who's vacuuming the hallway.
Oh yeah, I thought that was gonna be something.
I mean, it was, just making sure you know that that's a guy, because he does stuff later. But it's like, it's very awkward, and that's when they're like, his blood is not
as
human
much
blood.
As I've been like, oh my god, they know how to do cuts. They've been like a, oh, I wonder what somebody will say about this, and then it, like, cuts to the person being like, this is awful, like jokes like that, and as happy as I was to see them, the pace of this episode seems really slow.
This first one, specifically.
Yes, yes.
It's a little choppy, too. Mostly because you're just like, get to the fucking doctor!
Right. He spends a lot of it passed out and hiding his face, and you're like, I don't care enough about these other people yet. Everything's new, let me have the doctor.
I timed it. It's 12 minutes before we see the doctor's face.
And even then, he's unconscious.
So the vacuum guy, though, is important because he overhears the conversation on the phone about how weird the doctor is. The doctor. And he calls the newspaper, like, I got some news. Cha-cha-cha-cha.
All right.
I thought the physician was the one that called the newspaper.
No, it was the vacuum guy. He's like,
I was not paying enough attention.
Doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah.
He's not going to break that, right?
Even if it is an alien.
He's a good physician. Also, at the same time, we're learning more about, like, UNIT and what's been going on since then. We found out that, like, the previous, like, the Yetis and from the Web of Fear and the Cybermen from the Invasion have all been fairly well covered up, I guess. They've been not public knowledge, though it's kind of hinted at that people still kind of know. They're like, whatever, UNIT, you do the weird alien shit. We know what's going on. And they're like, no, we don't. We're just here at the hospital for no reason.
Yeah, there's a point where it gets back to UNIT that there is a blue box, a blue police box, and there was a man that came out of it. And so Briggs like, oh, good, I think I know that guy.
Like, immediately after he had been talking to Liz about the doctor, too. Like, very coincidentally. Oh, there's this guy named the doctor. He's great. Phone call. There's a guy that might be the doctor. Speak of the devil.
He shows up at the same time as all the press, and the press are like, what? Is it aliens? It's aliens, isn't it? And he's like, no. And he's like, if it wasn't aliens, then why is UNIT here? So they're not as secret as they think.
I love that every excuse they give is training exercises, to the point that people just start making fun of it, like, oh, well, UNIT said it was training exercises, you know what that means.
It's definitely aliens. I really like that dynamic of, like, shh, we totally covered it all up, it's fine. And everyone just being like, all right, so it's some weird alien shit, whatever. I don't care enough about this specifics.
I feel like that happens for a very long time, up until we get Donna, and then it's the opposite, where everyone around her is like, there were aliens. She goes, I was in Spain. There were aliens in Spain.
Right now, everyone is Donna Noble.
During the scene with the news people, there's another bit of awkwardness that I just thought was awkwardness, but actually turned out to be a plot point. And there's just, they cut to this, what I assumed was just a really weird reaction shot of a guy just staring. And I did not realize that was intentionally kind of creepy. Because that guy turns out to be, spoilers, our bad guy for the serial. But I was just like, why do they hold on this guy, this one news reporter, for so long? He's not even doing anything. Get on with this story.
They're going to do that so many times.
But yeah, he turns out to be important and weird.
Then you have the really frustrating scene of like, well, is it the doctor? No, I don't know that guy.
Yeah, because the brig goes in and turns him over. And there's the doctor. And he's like, that's not my doctor.
I have no idea who this guy is.
Half of my notes from this point on are just direct quotes, because I love the dialogue in this episode. The brig looks at him and goes, I've never seen it before in my life. And the doctor opens up his eyes and goes, Lethbridge Stewart, my dear fellow, how nice to see you again.
Which, by the way, I feel like at this point, his first couple bits of dialogue
are very two.
Very two.
It fades away, but like it's there very strong at the beginning.
That's because he's still adjusting.
Yeah, it's great. A very kind of organic performance of like becoming a slightly different person.
And then he asks to see he wants to see his face, and he gets a mirror, and he's like, oh, I don't like this at all. And then he's like, actually, you know what? It's pretty great. I like this face.
It's growing on me.
Okay, so this episode, it's one of those things that it's weird watching it after you've watched New Who, because New Who has so many parallels to this specific episode, especially if you watch Rose. So from this point on, there's a lot of scenes of the Doctor getting a mirror and, like, judging his new appearance. And that comes from this episode.
Like, every regeneration story has, like, ripped this off a little bit.
I feel like this episode really establishes a lot about regeneration and how it works. I mean, I know we've had one before, but it was kind of like, the first one was like, ah, and then he changes into a new person. That's weird, right? This is, like, the first time where it's like, it's a thing that he can do, actually, and, like, for whatever reason, this is the one that people look to.
Yes, because when the first Doctor died and became two, it was all about finding a way to continue the series, and it was a shock. When two becomes three, it's more about reinventing or reinvigorating the series to keep going with different actors. And that's exactly why I think the Ninth Doctor episode, Rose, is basically this episode done new. It's got the same monsters and everything.
Yeah, the Autons. Also,
done better, I might add, I believe, in this serial, in the classic serial, I think they are done better in almost every way. I feel confident saying that. They are scarier in this serial. I fucking hate them, you guys. I hate them so much.
It's not just Rose that references this. I mean, I feel like even like Tin's first episode, where he's just completely out of it for like the whole episode, is very similar to how the Doctor's completely out of it for this episode. Or Eleven's first episode is all in like a hospital and like stealing clothes. There's so
Has he ever regenerate? Oh no, I think Five. Five didn't steal clothes.
Eight stole clothes from a hospital as well. There's a whole lot of that.
I say it all comes back to this episode.
I feel like 12 didn't really have any references to this that I can think of.
I did write down something about 12. What did I write down? I think it's later.
Other than his clothes kind of are similar-ish to 3, with the cape and everything.
What I wrote down about 12 is all the eyebrow jokes.
I will say, I have watched every single regeneration. And I particularly love, like, this moment of, like, first of all, you have regeneration sickness, which is fun. You have a very competent character who's disoriented and doesn't know what's going on and is being extra silly.
Settling into his new
form. He's also particularly vulnerable, too. Like, I feel like when you had from 4 to 5, 5 was basically passed out for, like, a huge chunk of the time and, like, was carried around in a box. And you also have the, you know, the actor playing around and establishing what they're going to be doing. I love regenerations. They're so much fun. There's so much good stuff that's happening and being played with.
So after he wakes up, looks at his face, he's like, you know, I'm very tired, and goes back to sleep. And I was like, this is my doctor. But they all leave, and then we find out he was faking. He's totally awake.
Which at that point you said, this is definitely my doctor.
And then we found out that that weird guy is definitely important and weird, because he's just standing in the phone booth, not doing anything, just standing there. And they're like,
for a long time.
Hey, buddy, we need to use that phone booth. And he's just like, what? Oh, all right. And leaves. He wasn't doing anything.
No, we get the impression that he's been just kind of staring off into space for like half an hour or more.
Why? I don't know.
He was just waiting for instructions. He didn't have anything else to do, so he just stopped.
So the guy in the forest who was digging in for whatever reason, because you just want to dig a hole, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's gotten one of the meteorites, but he bumps into one of the unit guys. Because, like, do unit guys not know how to set up a fucking perimeter? I don't...
You're so mad.
Well, they did. They just did it in the wrong place.
I guess so. But he's like... sort of hinting around like, hey, what if I found something? Unit is like terrible, by the way. Just get the guy some fucking money and get your information. Let him go. Jeez. But they keep like, no, you have to tell us or else. And he won't do it.
He's like, nah.
He's like, but at this point he's like, I don't know anything. Do you want to buy a rabbit? I was out here hunting. Oh, I guess that's what he was doing. But why was he digging in a hole for a rabbit?
I mean, he was probably setting a trap. Like, I guess that makes sense. It just wasn't explained well enough in the first place.
So then the doctor wakes up again. He's like looking under the bed for his shoes. He really wants his shoes. Shoes.
He finds his shoes.
He's given his shoes, and then he holds on to them like a toddler.
He curls up with them.
Curdles?
Curls.
Curls. I thought you said curdles.
Nope.
Because I was thinking cuddles.
So you just combined what I said and what you were thinking.
Yeah, to curdles.
Yeah, well, he curdles up with it, and it's very cute.
Then everybody leaves, and he pulls a key out of the shoe, and then puts it in his mouth.
No.
Which is not sanitary.
His feet were on it. That key probably tasted like feet.
Ugh. And then he hides his shoes under his pillow, for whatever reason, because he's the
doctor. No real reason.
Out of nowhere, these orderlies come in and straight up kidnap the doctor. And I was like, whoa, what the fuck?
Kidnap him? They throw him in this wheelchair.
And they put tape over his mouth, which does not look effective at all.
But they're going to, like, load him up, and he's acting passed out still. And, like, the first chance he gets, he pushes the wheelchair off and just goes careening down this hill.
This is my favorite scene in all of classic Doctor Who.
I'm not adequately describing the scene. I'm not doing it justice.
It's a high-speed wheelchair chase. He's just flying out of there, down this ramp, and then down the street, in a wheelchair, still with tape over his mouth and everything, and they come after him in a car and still can't catch him.
Catch up with him!
You can almost hear the Benny Hill theme in your head.
There's a gif of this scene. I use it any chance I get.
And then get shot.
Yeah, he gets out of the wheelchair. He puts, like, a pillow under his clothes, like, under the blanket. So, like, which is very clearly just a pillow. Like, I was like, oh, he got out and ran away. But then, like, the guys come up and check it and, like, ah, oh, he's not under there. I'm like, yeah, that's clearly not a human shape.
That's clearly
just a pile of clothes. But he's making his way to the TARDIS, and the unit guys see him, and they shoot him in the head. And then it cuts to the credits.
That's the end.
It's Pertwee's first episode. We just get a new doctor, and in the first episode, he's shot.
I love that, actually.
We laughed so hard when he got shot.
It's like, oh, you guys think you know what's going on. You've got a new doctor. Haha, guess what?
I would love to have a new doctor be a doctor for like an episode and have him regenerate again at the end. I think that would be hilarious.
That would be so great, especially in New Who, because there's so much hype over who's going to be the new actor that they announce it like 2 years in advance. And they could do that for this. And then it's like, haha, actually we have someone else.
I feel like that would piss people off, but I think it would be great.
I would love it.
But that was the end of episode one, and we are now into episode two, which I have called Dollhead from Space.
I mean, that's appropriate, the Dollhead stuff. No, I'm not.
Is that how this one opens?
No, this one opens with the best thing ever, because they go to check him out.
He says he's more unconscious than anyone I've ever seen.
Anyone I've ever seen, yes. Before that, though, they're like, is he okay? And then it cuts to, like, in the hospital, and he's like, no.
He's more unconscious than anyone I've ever seen.
That's the most beautiful line.
I wrote that down.
Same.
We almost had to pause it. Like, I missed stuff after that because I was laughing so hard.
That's the best line I've ever heard. He's more unconscious than anyone I've ever seen.
I don't know how, by the way, they're like, yeah, he's in a coma, but it's self-induced. I'm like, I don't know what science you have to know that, but okay.
Well, I think they say that, and then he's just like, I don't know, this is weird shit, leave me alone.
He's like, I don't know, he's an alien. I'm making shit up.
I don't know what any of this bullshit is. He has two hearts. I'm not a very good physician. But he's like, but I do have this key. It was on him. He didn't want to let go of it. Do you want it? Gives it to the brig.
That's disgusting, because that key has been in his shoe and then his mouth. That key is gross, and now other people are just touching it. That's all I'm saying.
I feel like it's also rude that it's like, he did not want to let go of this. We had to pry it out of his hands. Hey, you want it?
And then we find out that the meteorite, because the unit has found like a broken one, it's very light plastic, because that's what the prop's made out of.
Uh-huh.
No, I mean, that's what they say. It's like a very light plastic. It doesn't seem like it's something from space. And then we find out that the weird phone booth guy is basically the leader of the baddies. And then we get the creepy doll head montage.
These cut directly to a close-up of these god-awful doll heads. Why? I don't know what was wrong with them. They all looked possessed.
They're making dolls.
Okay, but then why did they look old and crappy?
Because it's the 70s.
No, it was just there to be creepy. This is the point where I just kind of sat there. I'm like, why is this a favorite episode of mine? Doll heads, dolls, mannequins, anything like that. That is an immediate no for me.
Mm-hmm. I believe we were not watching the original version of that scene either.
What do you mean?
There was a Fleetwood Mac song over that bit of montage, and it had to be cut out for like the DVD releases because rights issues. So they put in some generic thing, I think. There's one DVD version that has it, and then the rest of them don't. I don't know why.
I don't remember any music in that scene.
Oh, no, yeah, I remember creepy fucking doll head.
Yeah, that's all I remember. They could have had any kind of music in the background. It wouldn't matter.
At this point is when I realized what the bad guys were.
Yeah?
I didn't know until this point.
Because you were expecting spearheads.
Yeah. Because I was expecting spearheads.
Evil spearheads. Guys, where are the spearheads? You still haven't answered me. I don't understand why you guys are being so dodgy about this. So there's this guy who worked works at this doll factory, and now he's not going to be working there anymore.
He had a really nice doll, too. He's very excited about it. There was something about that scene where he's like, we worked on the specs to this together, and it's a brand new doll. And I'm like, what you do? How cutting edge can this doll be?
He invented that one that pisses itself. That's my theory.
I watched that scene, like, what's it like to design dolls and be like, get rejected, and you're like, huh.
Well, you're not doing much with your life anyway.
That's rude.
Dolls are creepy.
That doesn't mean that the people who make them aren't doing anything with their lives.
They're making creepy, nightmare-inducing things.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fine. That's a perfectly valid life choice. Leave doll makers alone.
Alright. Sorry, doll makers. I apologize.
But also, stay the fuck away from me.
Yes, I agree.
Live your life. That's fine. I just don't want any dolls by me. That's all.
Also, when he's, like, being taken to the office, he, like, sees his old office, and there's, like, a big don't go in here sign.
Big security sign.
He's like, well, what's in there?
That's incredibly suspicious.
He's, like, really mad, like, why'd you fire me, and blah, blah, blah. I was gone for, like, 2 months, and now everything's weird, and you're acting weird. And then, like, his boss is, like, starting to get, like, frustrated and, like, not knowing what to do. And, like, he starts holding his neck, and then the weird phone booth guy comes in. And, like, he's clearly, like, hypnotizing his boss or whatever.
Giving him some mind control.
But, like, nobody really acknowledges him very well. Like, no one, like, the guy who is used to work at the company, who's been fired, doesn't really go, who's this fucker? What's he doing? What is going on? He just sort of goes along with it, and he's still mad, but he doesn't, like, call into question who this new creepy fucker is that just walked in and suddenly his boss is acting weird. But oh well.
What are you gonna do?
But they basically are like, leave. Get out of here. You're not welcome anymore.
There's also a really, really heavy-handed line where they say something like, there's something odd about those dolls' faces.
Wonder what it could be. And so Liz is examining the meteorites, and the brig comes up and he's like, am I interrupting? She goes, yes, leave me alone. But then she says that the meteorite is not a meteorite. It's been manufactured. It's plastic. And then they bicker a bit, and it's adorable, and I love them. Is the brig like a... Is he Team TARDIS now, basically?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. Also, I gotta say, he's like, I've never seen this guy before in my life. He's only seen the second Doctor. But technically, that actor has seen the first Doctor as well. Just throwing out there. He's worked with at least three Doctors.
He's seen the first Doctor?
He was in the Daleks Master Plan?
That sounds right.
Is the brig?
No, he was not the brig. He was Brett. He died.
Oh, yeah. All right.
He was, was it Sarah King?
Dang, he's been on the show longer than any of the Doctors.
He sticks around. I'm just throwing that out there. Nice little piece of Joe facts. That's a mini Joe fact.
Tiny, tiny Joe facts.
Like, when we watched that episode where he wasn't the brig, I didn't even know who the brig was, so it
wasn't exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting for me. The brig is going to be around so much now.
I'm glad. I like him.
Just all of the times.
Is that a real mustache?
I think so. I haven't inspected it, but I think so.
I'm not sure if it is. I think it might be fake. I don't know, though. Because I was watching a making of, and they had, like, of the invasion, and Jamie was talking about, or Fraser Hines was talking about how, like, he was, like, worried that it was straight. Or making jokes about it. Maybe it was real. Maybe he was just making jokes. I don't know. I'm going to have to investigate this. The brig stash.
Say, my next note just says, old school Autons are basically my nightmare. And then the next one says, he is a pretty dapper fuck, though.
The guy who took the meteorite is, like, looking at it in his shed. The meteorite starts glowing pink, and then the Auton's coming to it because it's, like, letting out a signal, and he's going, the Auton's going to go get it. He's got, like, a blue jumpsuit on.
And a like really denim. Nice scarf, because they didn't have anything to make the neck look like plastic. And then just the worst heads.
Like a it's like a mannequin mask.
Terrible mannequin plastic heads. I don't know how they did the eyes so that they could see. I think it's some kind of like mesh.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like someone put on a Halloween mask, but like couldn't get it on right. So you can't see their eyes. I don't like it.
We have a picture of the face that we both made when we see them for the first time. And my face is the face of pure terror. Like,
I think I also made a face like, it's like pure terror, but also maybe you smelled a fart. That's the kind of face you made?
Yeah.
Because you snarl up your nose.
Yeah.
Because you're like, no! Do not want.
No, sir, no thank you. I don't think we've had none of that, please.
I don't think we've had this visceral of a reaction since those creepy fuckers from Fury from the Deep. Oh, and that was just a guy. That was just a guy opening his mouth, making a face. Opening his mouth really wide. It's not cool. My next note just says, marital strife.
Mine says, she's not just a pretty face, and then, baby boy, tell him. Which is, of course, the Brig defending Liz, saying, she's not here to be pretty, like, she's so much smarter than you, dude, step off.
Well, mine was, my note was about, he shuts the guy who stole the meteorite or whatever, it has a bit of a bickering with his wife. They're a very stereotypical, like, sitcom cliche.
They're a terrible couple.
Yeah.
They don't even like each other.
Yeah, they should not be together.
So he like, hides the meteorite from her, and that confuses the Auton.
That, like, stops the signal.
Yeah. Because
it was in a trunk.
Like, it came all the way through space, who knows how many light years, and you got a signal, and you put it in a wooden trunk, and it just stops.
Can't do wood.
Why can't it go to where it was going to begin with? Like, couldn't it be, like, it was in that direction, and then just keep going. That's what I would do.
It's not that smart.
In the lab, the TARDIS is there. We see the TARDIS. I guess they carried it into the lab. The Brig has the key. And then we don't know entirely what happened because the cat knocked our camera down at this point.
The key doesn't work.
The key does not work. I saw that. The bit we missed was the after that, there's a general that comes in. And we missed his entire scene. But I guess that was setting up that he was going to get a Madame Tussauds wax figure of himself.
That's the scene where he is very misogynist and he insults Liz and Brig defends her. And then, yeah, Madame Tussauds, it's basically all of the top generals are getting wax people of themselves. It's not really clear why.
Well, because that's their plan.
Well, yes. It's like top generals, politicians, like anybody in power is getting one. And no one else questions it because they're just so happy to be included.
I would be. That's fun. Make a wax figure of me.
Oh, man, a Robot Joe would be great. Just a second Robot Joe.
I was just listening to the audiobook of Princess Diarist by Carrie Fisher, and she was talking about how they made a wax figure of her for Madame Tussauds, and how she wanted to send it on, like, business calls she didn't want to go on. Like, she wanted it just to step in for her every now and again, so she could go take a nap.
Like, I've always, like, had, like, those, like, daydreams of, like, if I could clone myself, one of them could go to work, and one of them could do this, and blah, blah, blah.
I would have never guessed that about you, Joe.
But the thing is, like, that's what? Such a low, that's such a mundane thing to do with clones. Like, I could do so much cooler things. Like,
oh, man, I wish I had a clone so I could take a nap. I'm so tired. It's, all the time.
It's like thinking, like, if I had a superpower, I could get my work done so much faster. It's like, if I had a superpower, I would exploit that for money, so I wouldn't have to do
Thought, like, imagine if you had control over time, what would you do? And it's like, I would stop time for, like, a month and take a nap.
I would, too.
For a whole month and just not talk to anybody.
I would just do it all the time. I would stop, like, mid-conversation, like, hold up, I need a break.
I would be like, if I could slow down time or stop time, I'd watch all the television I'd want. And then I'd be like, but then I'd also have to sort of envelop the television in my time bubble. I don't know if I have that much power.
I could definitely made up fantasy? Why not?
Well, there's got to be limits. I guess I could read books.
It could be a room.
I mean, you can affect things, and then to everyone else, it's just, like, super sped up. So they would just hear, like, a really high-pitched squeak for a second, and then nothing.
That was three seasons of whatever show I'm trying to watch. And so now we finally had the Doctor actually doing something. He sneaks into a Doctor's Only area, which is fine. He's a doctor.
Yeah, there's, like, a half-second look at his face where he's just like, yeah, that seems like me.
Then somebody else comes in. I was like, who is this fucking magician?
All he's been described as is a hospital bigwig, because the car we see earlier that's, like, super fancy and old-fashioned is also his. So they're, like, giving him a tour of the hospital, I guess.
It made me think of the Eighth Doctor with the whole, you know, the companion going to, was it, like, a opera or something? So she's dressed all fancy. That's why I was like, did he just come from the opera?
No, that's just how he dresses.
Oh. He's just that fancy. But the doctor's just taking a shower.
This is the other thing. So we have a new doctor. In the first episode, he gets shot. In the second episode, we have a nude scene.
And he has a tattoo, you guys.
Yeah, they don't even bother to hide it.
It's a snake, which he got in the Navy. But there are fan, or there's theories, and it's like, I think it's in like a novel or something, that it is a Gallifreyan like prison, or not prison, but like a, I guess a prison brand.
Like an outlaw?
Like criminal brand, yeah.
It's like a dark mark.
Yeah, because like, I mean, he's in trouble right now with Gallifrey, so that's like his little criminal mark. Like he did bad, so he gets a snake on his arm.
Well, at least it's a cool snake.
Also, it kind of looks like it's in the shape of a question mark.
That's a couple doctors from now.
I like that idea that it's sort of, because it's gone by the time that he's no longer in trouble with the Gallifrey, so it's only for this doctor. I like that theory. But yeah, he steals that guy's clothes.
Okay, here's the weird thing though, because that's what I thought the first time I watched this, and now this is, I've watched it again. The cape and the hat are his, but the frilly shirt and pants are not. Because that guy just kind of hangs up his cape and his hat and keeps going on with the tour. Like, he doesn't strip out of all his clothes. So there's just this frilly shirt and pants just laying around.
Well, yeah, there's a bunch of other clothes there.
Yeah, because he was, like, going through lockers and stuff, too, before that.
And this is what he chose to wear.
Also, he chose between two different hats, too. Because he put on that first one, which was terrible. And I'm glad he recognized that. Because it's like one of those, like, golfer caps, you know?
I would love for us to get a regeneration scene and the doctor goes to, like, steal his clothes, but there's, like, nothing there. Nothing that fits. So he's got, like, a tank top that's too small and flip-flops. And he's just like, I wear flip-flops now. Flip-flops are cool. Because there's nothing there that fits him. There's no, like, super frilly, like, Edwardian coat. He's just like at the beach and there's just swim trunks, a tank top that's too small, and flip-flops. Maybe. And he's just like, yeah, this is what my doctor wears now.
And one of those like umbrella hats.
Yes.
Oh god.
That's what my doctor wears.
Now that he's got some duds, he's gonna need a sick ride.
I'm just saying, I can never find clothes that fit me when I'm, like, at a department store that sells clothes. So it's amazing that he can just roll up at a hospital and be like, oh, yeah, what a good outfit. I'm going to wear it for the rest of my life.
He's done it at least three times. So he goes out and he steals the car that he does not know how to drive. He almost drives right into the hospital. He's like, oh, wait, that's not reverse. He's driven before as the second doctor in The Invasion.
Yeah, but particularly well.
I mean, okay. He drove out of an airplane. I don't think he knows how to drive a stick.
Sickness. He doesn't, he's not good at doing anything just quite yet.
I don't know. He, like, piloted that wheelchair very well.
He should be driving that right now. He'd be going, like, three times as fast.
Anyway, they cut back. He gets away, and Brig and Liz are like, it's okay. Brig's like, he won't get far. And then Liz is like, because you're going to shoot him. That's what you do. Shoot people. And then, meanwhile, the unit guys have found another meteorite in the woods.
Which, by the way, I don't know if we've said, but the one Liz has and is, like, testing and working on is broken.
It's just the shell.
Yeah, but they find an actual full one.
Full pinky one. They're driving it back to unit, and the creepy doll guy steps out in front of the Jeep, and the Jeep crashes. My God, there is blood. Like, it shows the guy who's driving the Jeep, his face is, like, smashed into the windshield, and there's just blood there. And I'm like, what is this?
It's a whole new Doctor Who.
It's not like this is the first time you've seen blood. It's the first time you've seen it in color. And for some reason, that is legit more shocking. You can show more blood in black and white. As in, who did that?
Quentin Tarantino did it.
Yeah.
In Kill Bill. Like, his movie was going to get hit with, like, an NC-17 or something because of all the blood. So he just turned it all black and white and got an R.
And I was like, yeah, that's fine. Because it is. It's legitimately way more shocking to see in color. Joe?
So then the doctor gets to unit, and then they're like, how did you find us? And he's like, I got this really cool watch.
That homes in on the TARDIS.
And then he claims to have lost his memory? Is that true, or is that just the doctor bullshitting?
No, that's true.
I see, because I'm not sure. Because it could just be him like...
You don't trust him.
I don't. Because he's definitely just trying to get away this entire time. So he could be like, I don't know what's going on. That seems like the doctor to just bullshit.
No, I think it's like a little bit of both. Every time he regenerates, he has kind of like a, okay, I think maybe I'm the doctor, and I know that. And, like, it takes him a while for all of him to come together again.
Yeah, everything's still, like, reconnecting.
He's got new neurons that have to figure out how to fire up together.
I thought maybe the Time Lords had zapped his memory, but I don't know.
I don't know about that.
But then there's a great bit of... There's a great joke about communicating with your eyebrows.
That's the note I made about 12.
He's like, there's a planet where you can... They just communicate through eyebrows, and then he does like some hilarious facial stuff. And
some
then
complicated eyebrow wiggles.
And then he's introduced to Liz, and then he just wiggles his eyebrows at her, and he's like, that's hello, and whatever it was, Delphonian or something like that.
What I love about this is, like, again, just how much shade Liz can throw and her dynamic at the break, but she warms up to the doctor immediately.
So fast.
Yeah, they're
and
just like, boom.
The doctor warms up to her.
Yeah, he just, like, goes out and then, like, looks at the meteorite piece and just, like, just, they're immediately, like, click.
Like, so anyway, science, you're delightful.
There's a good line here where Liz asks, what are you doctor of, by the way? He goes, practically everything, my dear.
Is he ever got, like, any official, like,
doctorate?
Training? Yeah.
I bet not.
No, I don't think so. I think it's actually established that he hasn't.
Doctor of everything, master of none.
But also, in this moment, you can see the exact second that Liz becomes best friends with the doctor, and it's when he tells the brick to go away.
Go away, we're gonna do science together, because we're way cooler. You are not welcome in Fort Science.
I think this is gonna be a good team. It feels weird calling it a TARDIS team, though, because the TARDIS is out of commish.
Do you have something against the ending of that word?
It's too long! Meanwhile, the dollmaker guy who got fired sneaks back in because security there is shit. He literally leaps over the wall and sneaks around and then goes back into his office. Also, we see that the general is there at this point, too. But he goes into his office and it's full of those doll guys. And the entire time you're just like,
so
nope.
Stupid nope. Mannequins. Just there's a row of them just in the background for like
too long.
It's an ungodly amount of time.
And then one of them, it move.
What's that?
It move.
It move. It move.
One of my notes says that we need a Patty Tolan in this episode. Just someone to walk in, see the Autons, and be like, that is a room full of nightmares. Goodbye. It would have saved so many people.
Yeah, no, someone needed to walk in there and go, nope. Walk back out.
Nope.
You would have died.
I would have died. Oh, yeah. Are we going to tell this story?
Yes.
All right. Let's tell this story.
Because you almost killed me. You almost got me cursed.
Well, let's explain this story before you explain how. All right. We were in this antique mall.
How come, by the way, all antique malls, so they look like they're small, and then you go into them and you're like, how big is this antique mall?
They're cursed and they bend time and space.
Like, you just keep walking through it and you're like, have I been in this room before? No.
No, you just keep going.
Yeah, so that was what was going on. And then far off, like, we're way deep in. And
way deep in the belly of the antique mall.
And this particular room is weirdly laid out. Like, I don't know, it's sort of like part of it goes around a corner and, like, tapers off. Buried deep in this weird corner that you have to, like, crawl around to get to is the scariest fucking
mannequin.
It's a mannequin.
And it's tucked away into the corner of the room, but you walk into the room and you see it immediately because it's so cursed.
No.
Like, it is tucked away, you shouldn't even notice it, but you walk in and immediately you're like, oh, that thing's evil.
So I was like,
and
I'm gonna touch it.
I'm standing in this room, like, I need to get the hell out of here, but, like, not moving. I'm, like, frozen by how clearly evil this thing is. Joe walks into here and he's like, that thing is clearly evil. And I was like, great, he knows, because normally he's like, I'm a skeptic and I don't believe in things. But he walked into that room and was like, no to that. And he was like, I'm gonna touch it. And I was like, you will not touch it, because you will not get me cursed.
Okay, listen though. I went up and I touched it, and then last year happened.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
It was me.
It was you.
I did this.
Getting us all cursed with the mannequin's curse.
I'm sorry. My apologies, you guys. Anyway, that's the end of episode 2. We're now into episode 3, which I've called Thunderballs.
Why did you call it Thunderballs?
Well, because they start calling the meteorites Thunderballs. The guy who was burying things calls it a Thunderball.
Oh, that's right. He's like, I call it a Thunderball. And the unit guy's like,
well, that's
all
dumb.
Right.
Thunderball is, I believe, also the title of a James Bond film. So, the Auton, it move, and its hand does the thing where it goes halfway, half of his hand falls away.
You said,
and it's a handgun.
He has a handgun, and I was like, you are mistaken. That is a gun hand. They're two very different things.
Do you think anybody thought that when coming up with that? They're like, it's a handgun. Ha!
Yeah, somebody. Everyone was like, shut up, Joe. Your hand gun, we get it.
We continue that tradition today. So he nopes the fuck out of there because, you know.
He has some sense.
Yeah, he wants to live.
And he runs out and, like, the general is being escorted, completely does not see.
Yeah, he's not a great general.
This mannequin with its gun. Okay, so, like, they're outside. There's, like, a stairs down to the alleyway. And they're leading the general through the alleyway. Mm-hmm. And the mannequin's at the top of the stairs, shooting at this guy.
It's not quiet shooting, by the way. He should be able to hear it.
But the general just does not hear anything. Military. Anyway, phone booth guy. Does he have a name?
I honestly don't know anyone's name in this other than the doctor, Liz, and the brig.
So the phone booth creepy bad guy.
Yes, Dean.
Is going to send one of the Autons to go kill that guy. Who, and that guy goes to unit. Because he's like, shit's scary. And then he maybe overacts a little bit. They're trying to give him something to drink and the water just falls out of his mouth. And he's like, it was alive! Ah!
Yeah, that's a bit much.
Calm down, sir. You're fine now. Well. And we'll get to that. The doctor and Liz are studying stuff. And then the doctor's like, this equipment's primitive. There may be what we need in the TARDIS. But they need to get the key to get into the TARDIS. So they're going to have to go do that. Meanwhile, the guy what stole the meteorite is going to once again try to get money for it and goes to the unit tent and is like, yo, can I get some money if I find it? And they're like, do you have it? And he's like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if I do find it, like if there's a reward, maybe I'll go look for it. And they're like, well, we are looking for it. And he's like, okay, but what if I find one?
What will you give me?
And I'm like, you have one, don't you? You piece of shit. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, you saw it. I saw it, but I didn't get one. The guy who worked for the doll people talks to the brig. And while he's talking to the brig, Liz comes in and straight up steals the key from the brig.
Yes, but a second before that, we start the scene. The brig is leaning so far back in his chair, and it looks like he's trying to seduce the civilian. And then Liz interrupts them.
And he's like, oh wait, I gotta be all business now. So he finds out that he's saying, like, I was gone for this little while, and now I come back and it's all automated, which... Was that true? Because we had the whole doll head montage, where, like, people were making the doll heads.
But not very many people. Fewer people.
Or is he saying the second time he went back when he sneaked in that it was all automated?
No, he's saying there are way fewer people. It's mostly all automated.
I thought he said it was all automated now. I don't know. Who cares? Liz gives the doctor the key. The doctor goes into the TARDIS, and the brig shows up like, did you give him the key? It's... terrible move, he's gonna try to leave. And she's like, no, he's not. And then we hear and then explosions.
and then we see smoke. And he has to come out very sheepishly and be like,
oh, it's a dribble.
So it's broken? Sorry?
Just the look on his face is like, look, y'all, I know I messed up. Please don't mention it. Like, let's just move on.
If we could just pretend that didn't happen, I'd appreciate it.
And he's like, they must have changed the codes on it, so I can't leave. He never specifically says Time Lords either.
But it's kind of heartbreaking when he's like, I had to at least try. Like, the idea of just being stuck on one planet in one time sucks. And I try to think about, like, if I had screwed up and they'd be like, look, that's it. We're taking the internet away from you. You just can't be trusted with it. Just being like, no, give it back. I'll be good. I promise.
And then you have to fight creepy doll people.
Yeah.
It would be the worst.
It would be terrible. I wouldn't want to lose the internet.
And then this is a weird bit that confused me. Cause then they're like, well, we need to go to the plastics factory and figure out what's going on. And then they don't do that. They do other things. And then later they're like, well, we should probably go to the plastics factory. I'm like, that's what you were going to do originally.
We don't know why you're here.
Because they go to that tent where the unit guys are, like, bickering and with the guy who's trying to sell the meteorite. Because unit are tightwads, you guys. Just give him money. Cough up a couple bucks. Get the thing you've been trying to get. Stop this nonsense. Because the guy does not have the meteorite on him because he's not stupid. But his wife finds it.
Takes it out of the trunk, and now that there's no wood around it, it can beam its signal.
But the guy does say, well, I have the Thunderball at my house, So that's going to lead them to his house, which is good.
And his passed out wife.
Yeah, because the...
I thought she was dead.
Did he kill the dog, though?
Yeah, I think he for sure killed the dog.
Because we hear... And, okay.
You hear like a dog barking, then whimpering, then nothing. And you're like, oh no!
So the aunt...
That's not a good series of sounds.
I'd say that's what makes her go in the house, right? And she goes in the house.
With its tiny door.
And he's just standing there.
What is up with those doors? Why are the doors in this house so short? Every single door.
I wondered that when she went up to the shed.
All the doors.
Like, all of them are too small.
What are they, hobbits? They're clearly not. Everybody has to duck. This old lady has to duck, and she's already kind of short.
They couldn't afford full-size doors, okay?
But yeah, she goes in the kitchen, and there's the Auton.
I hate it.
So she ducks out the back.
Scary!
She gets a shotgun and threatens it, and then she shoots it, which she did not brace herself.
She's a pro.
There would have been some recoil and stuff, and like she's just like holding it out in front of her.
You know more about shooting guns than I do, which is weird.
He lived in the South.
I have shot a shotgun.
Why do you hate them so much?
I don't like them. They're not cool, yo.
They're fine.
I don't like guns. Anyway, but yeah, like there was no recoil, no nothing. She just shot it and it was fine. I mean, other than the fact that it did nothing to the Auton. Then the Auton knocks her out and continues to look for the Thunderball but cannot find it because he can't see out of his mask. The Team TARDIS arrives. And they shoot at the Auton, and the Auton runs. Because we see that it's being controlled by the creepy phone booth guy, whose name is Channing, according to my notes.
That's when you wrote it down!
So Channing has a link with the Autons and tells him to run. Even though I don't know why, bullets don't hurt it.
That's a really good point. I think there are too many of them, though. It could have been apprehended.
Guess. Like, you can't, there's no room to maneuver, because all
the
doorways
are too
short.
And maybe it does hurt, like, a little bit, just not as much as, like, if you were a person.
Right.
You're just like, ow! It's like a nuisance, but if you get shot a whole bunch of times, even if it's a nuisance, they're like, stop.
They find the Thunderball. Team TARDIS does, not the Auton. And the Auton goes and breaks into the tent that they've left the employee at. The Auton kills him way dead.
Oh my god.
Wait, this is another scene where someone comes in the room and they're just like lying way too seductively. That dude, when the Auton came in, was like draped across this cot, propping his head up, like way too prepared. It reminded me of that scene in Avatar The Last Airbender when Zuko comes into the tent, but Sokka is expecting Suki, and he's just like laying there with candles all around him. That's what happens here.
There was a romance between him and the brig we didn't pick up on.
Yeah, maybe he thought the brig was coming over.
But he gets shot so dead he stops existing.
Like he gets shot. And then he gets shot again and, like, disappears in a bit of reverse smoke.
I think I said when it happened, I was like, I edit video. I know what happened there. I understand. But watching it, I was like, oh, they exploded him so bad he's gone! Oh my gosh!
And they're, like, worried about him for a little bit. But, like, that gets no real resolution. At no point are they like, whatever happened to that guy?
That's true!
I guess he just left. I don't know.
They just figured out that he died. It's not like there's a body to be recovered. They exploded him so bad he was gone.
They reverse engineered that guy. He's just gone.
Don't they like call it maximum destruction or something to that effect? And like it happens and you're like, that's the max. You can't destroy something more than that.
Team TARDIS shows up at the tent and they're like, well, there's a cut in the tent wall. Maybe he cut his way out and left. And the doctor's like, no. That's dumb. Somebody came in and got him. And they probably took him to the factory. We should go to the factory. I'm like, yeah, that's what you said 20 minutes ago. They go to the factory first because Channing is staring at the brig through this window.
It's the worst. It's not like he's staring at him and the brig can't see.
Because the brig notices. It's like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
The brig turns and sees him staring at him through the window and like jumps a little bit. And he does not move or stop staring.
It's also not like a normal window. Like, it's not clear. It's kind of distorted. So you see, like, a bunch of different versions of his face staring at the brig.
You see, like, 10 different eyes. It's awful.
It's creepy. But it's also, like, weird. Yeah, because then they go and they talk to the guy's boss. And he's like, yeah, we fired him because he designed this really stupid electronic doll that nobody liked. And, like, the doctor, like, props himself up in the background against this pole. Like, looking all...
First of all, what is that pole? I could see no functional or otherwise decorative use for this pole where it is in the room. But he is, like, leaning it, wrapped around it, like...
He owns that pole. Yes. But basically they get, nothing weird's going on here, please leave. And they're like, do your mannequins move? They are awfully flexible.
But no, they don't move on their own, that would be silly.
Please leave. Go. So the Briggs like, well, I wanna raid the place. Clearly something's up. And then this is when the doctor says that there is intelligence in the ball, in the thunderball. The pink stuff is smart. By the way, all of the lab equipment, by the way, I read, is all repurposed models from previous serials. Like, one of them is a spaceship model, and the other bits, they're all just stuff they've used before.
It was like, what if we took all the random science bits we had around and threw them in and called it a lab, and that would be our new set? You're a genius!
Let's save us so much money! Way to go, Joe. This makes up for your dumb comments earlier.
You've been redeemed.
So the Brig is like, well, the general was there to get all fitted up for a wax thing. Let's call him and see if he noticed.
I like that they call it too. They're like, we're getting a wax thing made. It's a wax thing. And then they go to the plastic factory to get it done. And they're like, so it's not wax, right? They're like, no, it's plastic. It's new. So they put it in the wax museum.
Didn't they just going to have to change the name of the museum?
Yeah. You can't just start putting plastic things in a wax museum.
That's false advertising. So they call up the general and he's like, did you notice anything odd? And he's like, no, because I'm blind. And he's like, but I'll help you guys if you say there's weird shit going on. We'll get a raid going. And he's like, hold on, I gotta go. There's somebody at the door. And he opens the door.
You'll never guess what happened.
He got Mickey'd. There's another general at the door. And that's the end of episode 3.
Although this is where I would like to talk about. Okay, so the difference between Mickey, the Nessine, and the general, the Nessine, are fast. And I would argue it is done way better here.
He looks like more lifelike. Like he's definitely very like waxy. Like this is where the sweatiness comes in. But yeah, Mickey looks like ridiculously unrealistic.
Yes, he looks believably plastic. You could mistake him for a human from a distance, but he does look realistically plastic. I mean, I think they did a good job. I mean, I think it's just like water or like Vaseline or like they just made his face kind of shiny.
There's some makeup.
There's
there
some,
too, yeah.
Some makeup to kind of cut down on to make him look flatter, I guess. But yeah, it's pretty good. It's fairly practical. Mickey is like, Rose, what the fuck is wrong with you? No, you can't actually be that much of an asshole. Are you really paying him that little of attention? And she is. She is actually that much of an asshole. Like, apologies, but come on! You guys, as much as you, even if you love Rose, you have to know, she did not treat Mickey right. You have to know that. That's all I'm saying.
Glad you got your little rant out.
I feel better now.
That was the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4. Which I've called Mannequins on the Move, which is a reference to a film called Mannequin 2 on the Move.
I hate mannequins. I hate them so much.
Then you probably don't want to watch Mannequin 2 on the Move.
Probably
even
not.
Even though it's a romantic comedy about a mannequin that comes to life and then they fall in love and shit.
I mean, that's the first movie.
Well, it's also the second movie.
What's the name of the Twilight Zone episode? It's not I Sing the Body Electric.
I don't know either than that.
But you know which one I'm talking about, though.
Nope.
She comes in, it's this lady, and she comes in and she's looking for a golden thimble. She has to go up to like the top floor and it's empty and creepy and weird. And it turns out that she actually was like a mannequin the whole time and they all trade out.
It's called The After Hours.
Yes, thank you. They'll get like a week to pretend to be human. And they're like, you've been out for too long. It's not fair to the other ones. But she forgot. She forgot she wasn't human.
That happens.
Not important. You can cut this out.
So
my point was, it's one of my favorites, despite not liking mannequins.
That's how I feel about this cereal. I hate mannequins so much. They're like my least favorite thing in the world. No, it's second to glitter. But I hate mannequins. But I love this cereal.
So like a glittery mannequin?
I would have to burn it.
You didn't like the glitter Ice Warrior?
No. I don't like glitter. Don't like mannequins. But I love this cereal.
Do not see the film Trolls. There's an entire troll that is made up of glitter. There's a scene where he farts glitter onto a painting or something. I don't know. It's been playing at work. It's terrible. Just warning you.
Okay.
Anyway, episode 4.
The doctor theorizes that they're a hive brain. I don't know how he got there, but he got there.
With science.
I mean, he's right. He didn't show his work.
Which, if you've ever taken a math test, means you're still wrong. Even if you got it a different way, but it's not the right way. I had a lot of bitter feelings about math.
the plastic general is like, nope, we're not doing that raid. And they're like, what? I thought you said we could. And he's like, nope, I'm evil. I mean, no, don't do it. So they're like, we think he's a plastic replica because he went to that museum. Let's take a trip to the museum.
These bad guys do, and that, you know, that seems right.
And I believe this was actually filmed at Madame Tussauds, or it's definitely the statues.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, except for the ones that are actors. But they go there, and then they, like, realize none of these are, like, celebrities or anything. They're all just government people. And they're like, are they the real one? Or we were like, are they the real ones? Which they're not. They're all fake except for the one guy. The general is the real general. Which, why didn't they just kill him? Why did they put him in a museum? That seems like a terrible idea.
They didn't have time to make a second mannequin, so they had to fill that spot real quick so no one would notice.
Yeah, they had to have him in the collection.
Well, they were already like, it's incredibly quick how fast they made him. It was too fast. So they fucked up there too then. Like, he shouldn't have been there. Anyway, so they're like, what do we do now that we're here? And then the doctor's like, we're going to pull a Home Alone 2 and hide out here until it closes. If you guys have not seen Home Alone 2, Harry and Marv hide out in a little toy house until the toy store closes so that they can rob the toy store.
That's Joe's favorite movie.
It is a great film. Go see it.
And see, I have heard so many references to this movie just by knowing Joe. He brings it up all the time.
It's a good movie. Have you not seen it? It's required viewing.
We named our trip after it, Joe. Like, I know what the movie is. I'm just saying, you bring it up very often.
I do, because it's a good film.
It's Die Hard for kids.
Oh, Die Hard's great, too. So they wait for closing time. Then we see that there is a tank in the doll factory where they're creating the perfect life form for the nesting, I guess.
Which looks like I'm just going to say it. It looks like a plastic butthole. I'm sorry. I didn't make it look like that.
It's a butthole in a tank. And there's like, no butt. It's just the hole.
Yeah, and it just squishes up against the glass every so often.
You're not wrong. And then they say that they're going to activate a bunch of the Autons, which we find out is going to be the wax museum dudes. So the museum closes. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They figure out that they're all plastic except for the general, whose name is Scobie.
Scoville, I think. Isn't it Scoville?
I thought it was Scobie. I don't know. The way that they figure out that the general is real and is not an Auton is because his watch works. Like, why would you go to all that bother of making a watch that works and, like, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, winding it and stuff.
To me, that makes more sense. It's like, instead of making this out of plastic or wax, I've got a watch here. It costs, like, $1. Let's just put it on him instead.
But it wouldn't be wound.
Why was it wound?
Because he's alive.
Who wound it?
He wound it earlier in the day. He hasn't been plastic that long.
It hasn't unwound. I don't know how winding watches work. I've never had a watch that you had to wind, so.
I couldn't tell you. Me either.
The past. So, Channing shows up, and he senses the doctor. He's like, there's an alien form here. Don't have time to worry about that. Let's activate them Autons. So he does. Not all of them walk out. Only some of them walk out. Some of them just still
Some of
around.
Them are really just wax dummies.
What happens to them? Where do they go?
You mean afterwards?
We don't see them ever again.
I assume they headed into town, where later we see all these other mannequins coming to life.
It's not very infiltrate-y. Like, they ran around getting, you know, people from government, but they didn't replace them.
I mean, they kind of did.
Yeah. But if they did it all at once, people would notice.
I mean, it's possible that some of those government officials have already been replaced.
Didn't right. seem very sneaky, is what I'm saying.
So, the doctor talks to the guy who is the boss of the doll factory, and is, like, trying to talk some sense into him, like, you're being controlled, don't do this shit, this is bad, and he's
you're
like,
you're clearly being mind-controlled.
He's like, I guess you're right. And then Channing comes in, and then the doctor and Liz hide in plain sight! I've missed that. I'm glad that is carried over into color. They're just sort of around, behind a curtain, kind of. Like, if Channing had taken a couple steps forward, they would have been caught. And, which they probably should, since Channing can apparently sense him. Anyway, they're like, hey, dude, we gotta get out of here and do shit. And he's like, alright. And they leave, and the doctor and Liz are fine. So the general has gotten, the fake general, the plastic general, has gotten the Thunderball from UNIT. He's like, I demand to have it, give it to me. So they give it to him, and he takes it to the doll factory, and they put it into the machine, and it's for the tank thing.
The plastic bubble.
For the... Yes.
I'm sorry, I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true.
They put the ball inside the plastic butthole, and it's very pleased at this.
Stop.
And then the next scene is the doctor and Liz trying to figure things out, and we get the doctor covered in wires, which is a very Two thing. I enjoy seeing the doctor just wrapped around, like, having wires wrapped all around him for no reason.
He's working.
And Liz is just like, man, I want a nap. Can I nap? Can we save the day, like, tomorrow? He's like, no, we gotta do it now. She's like, but, alright, fine. I like Liz.
Nothing endears you to a person like them wanting a nap.
I like naps. And then we have the mannequins coming to life and killing absolutely everyone. Like, indiscriminately, they don't care. They're, like, busting out a shop window, shooting people at the, on the side of the street. That scene was pretty good. I like this scene.
I hated it. Because it's terrifying. It's literally the worst case scenario. It's the worst.
I enjoyed it because it was scary.
Mannequins coming to life, killing everybody. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Well, I mean, I don't want that to happen in real life, but it was cool here.
It's too scary. It's too scary. I don't even think I, like, saw a lot of it because I was covering my eyes. Like, honest to God. Like, nope, not watching.
I mean, they basically did the same thing in Rose. Pretty much the same scene, but it's good.
10 times scarier here.
They're all wearing, is it because they're all wearing 70s outfits?
Yeah, it's the jumpsuits. It's definitely the jumpsuits that make them scarier. So, no, it's the faces. It's
faces are creepy. Meanwhile, at the doll factory, the boss is like, yeah, this is bad. And he tries to sabotage the tank. He's like hitting it with a stick or something. This is when Channing says that they are the Nestine. They're going to kill all humans, but you'll be spared because you've been helping
you
us.
You helped us.
And he's like, well, no, fuck you guys, and starts hitting the tank again. And then he is killed. And then he is way killed.
He is killed so bad to the max that he disappears.
That's the second person who's been, like, maximum destroyed. Why don't they just do that all the time? Why do they only save it for certain people?
It's rude.
I think it's more efficient and clean. Who wants dead bodies lying around? That's Why not true. Just shoop them up immediately?
Because sometimes they need the dead body.
So anyway, Team TARDIS and everything is a unit is starting their raid, and the doctor explodes a lock on a door like a motherfucking magician. He's like, hold on. He puts a thing on it. He's like, ta-da! With his cape and everything. But then the fake general shows up with more unit troops and is like, you can't do it. I did not approve this. We're here to stop you. And then the doctor's like, hold on a second. You're not real. And to prove it, I've got a microphone. Talking to this microphone. What, the microphone hurt him somehow? Like,
it's not a microphone. It's a weapon. I don't remember how. Like, it attacks the consciousness of the Nestine. It hurts him.
It, like, melted his face back down to the generic Auton face. And they're like, oh, you were right. He's not real. So the rest of the unit teams up with the brig and they're going to storm in. Well, actually, they're still talking. The doctor and Liz are like, fuck this, and sneak off on their own.
Like,
to go.
We don't have time for this red tape, bureaucratic bullshit. We've got a day to fucking save.
The Auton starts storming out at unit, and then there's a shootout because there's got to be a shootout. But the doctor talks to Channing. He gets into the main office and talks to him about expository bullshit here at the end. And the doctor's like, well, I'm going to destroy all of you guys. And he's like, ah, you can't do that. And he's like, well, I'm going to destroy this device. He pulls out his device. He pulls out his microphone thing. He's like, I've got this.
Your butt tank.
And then Channing's like, well, fuck you. And turns up the tank to 11.
Which is an option.
Tentacles just pop out of the top.
You guys, the tentacles are amazing. There's so many of them. Three's just wrestling them.
His eyes are bugging out. It's like they're wrapped around his throat and stuff.
I mean, like, he's clearly moving them. But I don't know. Like, I liked it.
It's very hammy, but it's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's cheesy, definitely. But in a great way. In a way where you're like, yes. Please, more of this.
Liz is, like, messing with the machine, the device, the microphone device, to, like, turn it up to 11 or whatever. Some bullshitty science thing so it'll take out the tentacles.
No, it wasn't working. They had never actually got it to work correctly. So she has to, like, take it apart and rewire it while he's, like, dying.
Yeah, she's fixing it. She's taking it apart and rewiring things. And he, in the meantime, is wrestling
hamming
these giant tentacles. Yeah. Which is great. You have the doctor hamming it up, and you have the companion doing the technical thing and saving the day. And it's good fun.
Yeah, because then they shoot it with the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the tentacle flame shits itself to death, which is what it looks like, because it's that butt just going... And there's flames, and it's
dead. This episode is rude.
It is. And then they see that Channing is dead. Killing the thing killed all the things.
Killed all of them.
That's the way aliens work, I guess.
If they have a shared consciousness, it is. If they're part of a hive mind, obviously if you kill the brain, you kill all of them. It's like you don't know basic science.
All right. And then the doctor's like, I guess I'm going to work with UNIT now, but I need to be compensated. Briggs like, I can get you money.
Yeah, the Briggs like, all right, I'll get you hooked up with a salary. And the doctor's like, a salary?
What am I, a rabbit? No, wait, that's a salad.
I wanted celery. I'm going to pin it right here. No, we're not there yet.
But he's like, no, I want equipment and lab shit. You know what? I really like that car.
You know, the one that I stole?
Can I have that car? And they're like, you can't have that car. That's somebody else's car. Well, give me a car like it or else. I'm not helping.
He specifically asks for Liz to work with him, too. He's like, you're going to put me on your payroll and you're going to put her on your payroll. And we're going to drive around in that badass buggy.
Well, then he's like, well, yeah, we can do that, doctor. Oh, by the way, I don't think I ever learned your name. What's your name? And he's like, oh, Dr. John Smith. Credits.
He's so proud of himself, too. He's like, Dr. John Smith. Nailed it.
He uses that name so much after this.
That was Jamie's. Jamie came up with that. That wasn't the doctor. That was Jamie. I like Liz Shaw, though. Okay, so, but that's it. That's the end of...
Spearhead.
Let's jump into the end here.
Final thoughts!
I think this episode, this serial, whatever you want to call it, is proof that we should burn all mannequins and display our clothes on racks or in piles like civilized humans. The Autons are creepy as hell. I don't like them. Like, I don't like mannequins, and I didn't like the ones in Rose, and these ones are so much creepier. And, like, I realize that is because they had a much lower budget for their costumes, but it works. So I like that. I love, love, love Liz Shaw. She's one of my favorite classic companions. And, like, she just saved the planet and the Doctor in her first episode, and she still gets no respect. It's ridiculous. Everyone should love Liz Shaw. The problem with Liz, I mean, she's perfect. The problem is she gets followed by a much more popular companion, so people forget about her, and that is very unfortunate. I like Three. Three is the classic Doctor that I consider to be my Doctor, because, like I said, I got just little pieces of One and Two, and then I had to continue everything in order after I watched this episode. So it's this episode that really got me into Classic Who. I love the Brig. I like that this serial, like I said earlier, is basically to reinvent Doctor Who. You know, at a certain point, we dropped the historical episodes, which was a mistake. But then we had all this bouncing around the universe. We had these really huge stories. And now we've got a new Doctor, and we're going to hang out on Earth because it's so much cheaper to film there. We're just going to hang out here. We're going to do these small contained stories where the Doctor has a boss that he has to report to, and he can't fly in the TARDIS anymore. He drives around in a yellow convertible named Bessie instead. And I love that. Yes, I will finalize my final thoughts. And that I love this Doctor. I love this serial. I love Liz Shaw. And we should burn all mannequins.
I will second that. I kind of feel about the Doctor in this serial the way I felt about Jamie when he was introduced. Which is like, alright, I'm probably gonna love you. But you didn't get to do much this time around. And he definitely had a couple of really great moments where you're like, oh yeah, that's the Doctor still. Which I feel like you have to have in a regeneration story. You have to have that moment where the audience goes, oh yeah, I know him. He's got a different face, but he's still the Doctor. And he definitely has his moments. I think for Three, a lot of it comes from him like fighting the tentacles. That's a good moment.
And the eyebrows thing. I really like
the eyebrows thing was very, very Doctor-y. But really, he doesn't do... I mean, I feel like a lot of the action is kind of loaded into that last episode.
Well, he was unconscious for the whole first episode, pretty much.
Yeah, the whole first episode. And he doesn't do much in the second or the third, because he's doing science.
When he's not escaping in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was pretty great.
That was an excellent scene. I can't say anything bad about that. That was fun. His kind of couple of defining moments in the serial are campy fun. Believe me, I do not mean camp in a bad way. That is nothing but singing praises from me. And so that's kind of what I am going to be expecting from 3 is fun, lighthearted fun, a little bit of campiness. Yeah, I don't like the Autons in this. I hate them so much because they scare the crap out of me. I think this is one of like the first times I've been genuinely like, nope. The Daleks have terrified me on occasion, but then also sometimes the Daleks don't scare you. Like sometimes the Daleks are terrifying and sometimes they're a joke. They can function as either depending on what you need them for. I've genuinely hate the Autons in this. Genuinely, there were parts where I was like, I can't watch this. I'm too afraid. But overall, there's like lots of bits that I really, really like and really enjoyed, but I feel like it could have been stronger. I would have liked to have seen the Doctor showcased more.
What about Liz and Brig?
Oh, should I even talk about them? Did I?
No, that's why I brought them up.
I loved Liz immediately. She's great. I think that's what I was going to say. I said I felt that way about Jamie. Like Jamie was the Doctor in his first episode. Liz Shaw is another character. You know what I'm talking about.
Zoe?
No, the character that's in Jamie's first episode where we're like, we thought she was going to be the companion.
Oh, Kirstie.
Kirstie, yeah. That's kind of how, like, this seems like more of an episode to introduce Liz. Where you're like, oh, dang, she is great! Look at all the great things she's doing! Which isn't a bad thing. I like when kind of the companion gets some stuff to do and isn't more of just, like, a something for the Doctor to play off of. Gets to be their own person. I like the Brig. I don't feel about, like, the Brig like I feel about other companions. I think it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think I like the Brig so much in this because I've seen so much more of him.
Yeah, I definitely like him. I'm like, oh, yeah, the Brig's cool, but not like I love Jamie. And I really just think it's a matter of like, this character is going to be around for a while. I'll get there.
I definitely feel like this is a great serial for Liz Shaw. And I feel like, okay, I feel like 3 did not establish himself as the Doctor as well as 2 did. Mm-hmm. But like 2 started immediately. It was weird and interesting. You're like, what's his deal?
What's he doing? Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about the companion so much because they're Ben and Polly. They've mm-hmm. been around, so you sort of already know who they are. Whereas this, you have to get to know Liz. I do feel like maybe they pushed off the Doctor a little bit too much. I feel like he should have been in it a little sooner. Like you said, you don't even see his face until 12 minutes in, which is a little ridiculous.
Yeah, that's halfway through an episode. That's a little bit more than halfway through an episode.
Yeah, and that first half isn't, like, enthralling. It's setting up Unit. It's setting up Liz. It's setting up
I think the problem with this serial is that it's effectively a pilot. Mm. It's got the problem that all pilots have. It has to establish everything because it's a pilot for what is essentially a new show.
That being the case, you need to establish the Doctor.
The Doctor too, yeah.
Though, to be fair, the first Doctor did not get set up fairly quickly either because it was all about Barbara and Ian and Susan. He probably doesn't show up until like 12 minutes in. I don't even know. It's definitely late game.
It's kind of a long time.
I feel like it was more interesting in the first Doctor though because it's all new. You don't know what's happening. Whereas when you're watching in the third Doctor, you're just like, get to the Doctor! We know who he is and we want to see him. Whereas like, there's a bit more of a mystery going on in that mm-hmm. first one. You're like, who's this? What's, and like, that's what that's about. But like, this is more like just getting the pieces in place.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to make it a mystery. Like, oh, who's the Doctor? When are we going to see his face? Because you know there's a new one coming, but it's just not as successful.
And even after the Doctor is established, which, you know, he had the shoes bit, he had stealing the clothes and the wheelchair. There is also just a lot of periods of time of him just standing around waiting to do something. There could have been less of those scenes. When he's doing stuff, it's great. It's fantastic. But there's also just times where he's like almost in the background of like units going around and he's just sort of following and like chiming in every once in a while. He doesn't seem to be as leading the way in this one as he does in other. And actually there's been episodes in the past that I felt that way about too, and they are sort of Earth-based ones where he gets involved with the army, like the War Machines with the first Doctor. The Doctor gets sort of pushed to the background and the army sort of takes control. And I'm not as hip on that, but I'm going to have to grow get used to it because that's what's happening.
That's what's in store.
Because now he's got a job.
But like, that being said, I love Liz. I loved her, like her first scene. I like the Brig and I love 3, and I think 3 is great so far. Like 3 is the one Doctor I knew the least about going in, because like I at least had like a vague idea of every Doctor just from pop cultural osmosis or whatever. But like the third Doctor, like literally all I knew was like, I think he knows Kung Fu, and that's like it. That's all I knew. I knew it was like stuck on Earth and he knew Kung Fu. But I didn't know anything about, like, his personality. But it seems, he seems like the Doctor. So I enjoy that. Oh, and also, I guess I will say, yes, I too was terrified of the Autons.
Oh, I will say one thing that I'm looking forward to is that the little bit of the dynamic between the three of them, between the Doctor and Liz and the Brig, seemed great. Like, my major complaint is that I didn't get enough of that.
Right.
Of them just sort of playing around and playing off of each other. But I am super looking forward to it.
I was also terrified of the Autons. And I feel like you're comparing them to Rose. I think in Rose, they're too sleek. They're too perfect. But whereas here, they're
supposed to be... I think they are played more for laughs in Rose.
Yeah.
They're used comically. It's not like, oh, they were trying to make them scary and failed. It will say, like, I understand that. I prefer them scary.
I was about to say, I feel like they are kind of shitty, but, like, they're imperfect and they're, like, off. And that makes them scarier because they're not perfect. They're not smooth and sleek and perfect. They look like off humans.
Anytime something looks human but not quite, I think that's what it is about mannequins that is so scary, is that it looks almost human. It looks human maybe? And you're like, that like little bit of like gray area is like what your brain is like, I don't know what it is, but something's not right here.
It's called the uncanny valley.
Yeah. Your brain's just like, I don't know, but you should be really far away from it. And that's why mannequins are the worst.
But I feel like, yeah, they're way more effective here than they were in Rose.
Yeah.
100%. Even, and Channing was really good too, at just being, just staring at people and you're like, what the fuck is your problem?
What are you doing, man? Freaking me out.
I'm excited about continuing on. I'm a little sad that this is, that we're about to go to video. But it was nice seeing this in film and color. Colors were all pretty good too, very late 60s. But all in all, two thumbs up. There's some things that could be improved, but overall, I liked it. Jez, any plugs?
Check out my website as usual, howtogrowthefuckup.com. We're also on Twitter, just HTGTFU, and Instagram, which is howtogrowthefuckup.
Twitter's got that character limit.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but that's where you find me most of the time. I spend more time on there than I do on the blog, because it's just easier.
Interact with Jez. And if you like the episode, this episode, the one that we just did, you can check out more on watchyourasslon.com. And you can follow us on Twitter too.
You can.
Which is what? Watch Your Ass? I think it's Watch Your Ass. WATCHYOURRASS.
It's not part of
your spiel. It's
not part of my spiel. It should be.
I think that's the only social media thing we're on. We're not on Facebook or anything like that.
We have Twitter and we have Tumblr.
Yeah, Tumblr is just the watcherasslon.com. So you can just, those two are the same thing. Follow us on Tumblr. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes.
Follow us down the street.
And leave comments and rate.
Rate and comment on iTunes. It helps us out. It gets us in the search results better if you just say things like, hey, I listened to this.
Even if you're like, hey, I listened to it, it's all right. It still helps us out.
So you think you may be like doing us a disservice by saying we're shitty, but joke's on you. But if you'd like to help us out even more, go to washyourasslon.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards like videos of us watching the episodes and watching the cat knock the video over, uncut video of the podcast records, and day early episodes. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. And speaking of, special thanks to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode. You are a saint. I said that earlier, I'm saying it again.
Thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's it. Tune in next time when we talk about Doctor Who and the Silurians? Silurians? How do you pronounce that?
Silurians.
Silurians?
Silurians.
I gotta say, not a fan of Doctor Who and the...
Too bad, that's his name.
It's not his name.
That's how one was credited, and you know it. You've watched it.
He's Dr. John Smith. That's it. Bye.
Bye. I love you.
Bye.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
Do it or else.
Yes, he's more unconscious than anyone I've ever seen.